Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day, big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss, from the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right, and before I do the intro, I want to sing a song together. Are you ready for this, DT? We're going to do Only the Bulls on three. One, two, three.
Only the Bulls.
Only the Bulls.
What are you? Are you like Whitney Houston? Just like screwed up the national anthem? Like you just like went way off beat. It's like trying to sing with Stacey King doing like the Nationwide song where he's just like, oh, I got to put a lot of soul in this and just like now I'm amazing, even though like, yeah, not really. And then mocks everyone else. Like, come on, dude, just stay on the beat. Sing the song.
Do you want to do it again?
Give it another try? I'm done. That was it. That was terrible.
I got some lyrics, new lyrics.
We have new lyrics? Ready for it? Are you going to tell me the new lyrics or you just expect me to sing along?
Giddy sets a court on fire. What do you say? Only the Bulls. Mark K has unretired.
Only the Bulls. Okay, I picked it up.
Enough done. You got the gist of it? I'm working on it. I'm workshopping this.
We'll workshop that. We'll see what we can do later on.
Oh, it's a great one. Doug Tonis, how you doing, brother?
What's going on, man? I'm pretty good. You know, we're recording on Friday morning, and you know, we just saw the epic comeback a few days ago, and you know, the schedule doesn't get any easier. So we'll see what happens tonight. But it's good to get one in while we're 6-1 and feeling like on a high. So, yeah.
I correctly predicted their first loss in the last episode. I listened to it over.
Well, stop predicting losses, dude. Like, you know, if you're a prophet and you control the fates and stuff, just predict wins. I want 82-0. I mean, 81-1, you know, now that you already cost us a loss, I can pin it on you.
I love going over my old tweets too, because there was a really good one that I had after the first two games where Ramina, you know, half the people I respect and the other half I don't, were just all over me about Isaac Okoro, and there was a little comment from you in there, DT. I remember I got a question the prophetic skills of something to that effect, you know, so that the gist of that. And then after the last game, boy, I'm really coming back after that. You know, Coro's 50-40-80 in his last five games. You aware of that?
Yeah, 50, anyone who is tangentially aware of you is always aware of what Isaac Okoro is doing. it'd be impossible to be your friend and not be aware of what Isaac Okoro is doing. I've never seen someone so excited about a player so mediocre as you are about Isaac Okoro. It's like,
oh, how dare you!
What?
After the last game, he's not mediocre. He's a fantastic defender.
He's mediocre. He's a mediocre player. He's like a seventh, eighth man on a rotation. Like, it's fine. Like, I'm not complaining about Isaac Okoro. He's fine. He does well. He does well in his role. There's nothing wrong with him. But like, you love him like he's Michael Jordan. Like, I mean, that's the only thing.
No.
Like, yes.
He's not that good.
Dude, no one talks about a guy who averages 7 points a game like you talk about Isaac Okoro.
Because that's not what I love about him. What I love about him is...
No one talks about Keith Bogans the way you talked about Isaac Okoro.
Don't you pull out a Mark Kay quote. I almost wanted to reach through my smartphone all the way to Australia to slap Mark with that guy. No, he wasn't. That is such a joke.
It's a very good
He was not a fantastic defender. He was not. He was not even close to the best on the team. There's no one on this team that's in the same stratosphere. And I was shocked in the last game against Philadelphia. Like, I missed the first half, most of it, just due to a previous obligation. So I didn't get to watch it until after the game. You know, a couple people tweeted me, you know, about how Maxey had, you know, just an insane first half. I watched the game over. Okoro they had on VJ Edgecombe. They had Trey Jones on him for some insane reason. And I highlighted this and recorded all his baskets early on. And they were just ISOing him and Embiid in a pick and roll. And you get these horrible switches with Trey Jones and Vooch on it. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Instead, second half, fourth quarter, you got Okoro on him. He didn't score for the last 6.5 minutes. Just come on, man. He is a really elite perimeter defender. And that last game, it all started when he took the charge on Embiid. That was hilarious.
You're so proud of that, aren't you? This is about as proud as like the reverse of like when Zach Collins like sprained his wrist and I'm like, see, charges. And now you're like, see, charges. Like it's
the exact fun opposite. Stuff. That's fun well stuff. Said.
It's fun stuff, you know. Like so.
No, so your comments on that game, though. I mean, that was one of the best Bulls games of all time.
To be honest, I have almost the exact opposite experience of you. I was like watching the first half, and I watch most of these games on my computer with the sound off. My wife and I are kind of like watching something else, like because she doesn't want to sit much basketball. And then I got to through the first half, and I'm like, "F this!" And I turned it off. And I'm like, well, whatever. They've been coming back lately, so I just checked the score, and there was like 2 minutes left in the game. And I heard her coming back, and I'm like, oh my god! So then I flipped on.
Oh,
so
you
I
didn't saw, even know.
So I saw
you
the
didn't even know they were
well live. Shutting it down? No. So like live, I saw the first half, and then I saw the last 2 minutes, and then like you, I went back and watched the second half later. But it's different when you're watching it and you know the outcome versus when you're watching it and you don't know the outcome, right?
Oh, totally.
You know, like it's
totally,
like,
yeah.
So it's a different thing. But I did see the end live and I saw the first half live. So, I mean, it was a great game, you know, for the team. It was a great comeback. You know, at the beginning of the game, when they were losing, in the part like I saw live, it was just like you kept seeing Philadelphia just getting wide open three after wide open three, and they're hitting it, and I'm kind of watching this . And my live thoughts of this were like, oh my god, like maybe the Bulls really aren't that good, like because they're giving up all these wide open threes in these other games and teams just weren't hitting them. And I'm like, this is just what should happen. Like when you give up wide open threes over and over again, you should be getting killed. And that was kind of the theme of what happened in really both of the New York games for a while. I mean, they won the first one. But for a while, it was like New York was shooting really great in these games. And, you know, it's like the Bulls just like, this is like a real problem, but then they've shown this resilience and they've come back and they've fought back and they've made adjustments. And you know, all these people who've said Billy Donovan can never make adjustments. I don't know where you at. Like I think it's like they've done a really nice job. Like they've rebuilt this whole offense in a totally different way. You know, like we've always been pretty high in Billy Donovan, but I think he's done a fantastic job this year too. And yeah, like
I don't know how you can debate that.
Yeah, I think awesome. Isaac Okoro has been good. You know, not as like noteworthy to talk about. Like, in considering like Josh Giddey is like maybe an MVP candidate. Like, I don't know that we need to talk about Isaac Okoro so much in that sense. And you know, our boy Nikola Vucevic, who, like I could not rip on any more possibly. Like this guy, like I just absolutely shredded in a meat grinder for like the last 5 years. Is really been fantastic. You know, like, and people are like, oh, you're eating all this crow now. And I'm like, well, no, I'm like, I'm happy to say the guy's playing fantastic when he's playing fantastic. Like, it's not like I'm sitting here and have this personal vendetta against Vooch. Like, he was an awful train wreck. And I pointed that out when it was true. And now he's fantastic. And I'm happy to say he's fantastic. I root for him to be fantastic. Like, I'm never hoping, you know, these guys play badly just to prove a point I made right. Like, it's great. I'm psyched that he's hitting the three, and he had that game winner against Philly, and like you even had confidence when he was shooting it, Vooch in the corner open, we're gonna win this, like, which is an insane thought compared to a couple years ago, you know, when you're just like, oh dude, he's like, there's no chance, like Vooch with the ball, no chance. So it's great, like it's all great, and yeah, we're living the dream, buddy, totally Midwestern, living the dream.
Yeah, there's not one commentator who follows the Bulls who's been wrong on something. In fact, you know, that's a one kind of, I find, little irritating thing where Joe Colley came at me about Vooch. I was extremely positive on Vooch last year. I called him, I love stretch five Vooch forever. I think that's what I wanted out of him. And to deny the fact that he sucked the year before in 23-24 when he shot 29%
dude, I can't even talk about Joe Colley. Joe is like running around doing victory laps as if he's ever said something positive about this team. He's like trying to find people to like make fun of. I'm like, dude, this is hilarious. You of all people are going out and like trying to claim like you're some, you know, some prophetic stuff you've said as if you've said anything nice about anyone in the history of your writing. Like, come on, get out of here. Like, it's just hilarious. But I mean, like, it's funny because Joe on a podcast or Joe in person or Joe talking about basketball, I actually enjoy like quite a bit. Joe on Twitter, I also enjoy quite a bit, but like in a totally different way. Like Joe on Twitter is just like the ultimate troll. Like he's just going around just trying to stir up stuff. And Joe, when you actually talk with him about basketball in a serious sense, like I think it's quite reasonable, but like it's like there's two completely different personas, and he's the only media guy who does like acts like a 13-year-old on Twitter. Like that is like on Twitter, he engages. And, like other people engage, like there's lots of people I like who engage, but he engages like a 13-year-old. Like he's just like it, like he says completely irrational stuff, totally unfair stuff. Like if you look up like all the fallacies around like how you would argue, he uses all of them constantly. Like it's completely like and everything he says on Twitter is completely worthless. Like it is just there to stir up shit. Like that's it. It's like he is your 13-year-old best friend just giving you crap. Like that's Joe on Twitter. And like I said, Joe in any other format, like on this podcast or when you're talking with him, is fine. Like he's actually a, you know, pretty bright, reasonable guy. But like on Twitter, it's just insanity. And so you either can and people will be like, oh, do you hate Joe? And I'm like sometimes he'll go hard at me and I'll go hard back at him and people will be like, get all defensive. And I'm like, you can't take any of this serious. Like, you know, if you respond to Joe, what you're getting into on Twitter, right? So,
exactly.
You know, like sometimes I love like the stupid banter. Like sometimes, like I enjoy it. Like it's just, it's like, okay, like we'll go off on each other. Like whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just funny stuff, you know, but like but you can't take anything he says to you if he goes off on you on Twitter seriously. Like it's like, okay, guy, whatever.
It's not just him, though. You know, all the other content creators, you know, someone will come back. All the people who criticized, Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey was absolutely worth criticizing for the first half last year. He was horrific on the defensive end. You know, you got to call it like it is. You can't just be living in a bubble. I admitted when Isaac played terrible in the first two games on the offensive end, he's been absolutely awesome on the defensive end for every game. Like, yeah, call it like it is. I thought Vooch was awesome last year. I thought he was terrible the year before. Guess what? I was right in both accounts. He's been awesome so far this year. But the same people that are calling us out for like, you guys were critical of Josh. Number one, I was not critical of Josh last year. I became a full-fledged Giddey in the second half of the year. And I did believe I wanted him back and I wanted him re-signed. And now I'm, you know, like people were talking, the debate was pre-Josh. Are we going to see pre-Josh All-Star game or post-Josh All-Star game? My counter is now he's at a whole nother level. Like the whole are we going to see pre-Josh? That's dead. Like that to me has been put to rest after these first seven games. He's either post-Josh or all-star Josh now.
And well, post-Josh was all-star Josh.
Yeah, I think he's played better though.
I don't know. I mean,
he's been better.
He was near a triple-double post-all-star, and he's near a triple-double now. Like if he's better, it's marginally better, but it doesn't matter. Like he is playing at a for sure all-star level. For sure. And like I said earlier, he's like, if the Bulls like actually kept up a great winning percentage, and I think we're both a little skeptical that that will happen. At least I am.
Well, they're on the pace for 70 wins. Yeah.
So that's clearly they're not going to win 70. But like if they, so, right. But say they won 55, right? Like say they won 55, which would be beyond our wildest dreams in the offseason. If they won 55, like Josh would probably be in the MVP conversation. Like he's not going to win it, but he'd be in the conversation. He'd be like the fourth guy or something on that list. I mean, that's insane. Like that is the best possible outcome of getting Josh Giddey. And like we talked, maybe more me than you, but I talked about like his stats when we got him. Like there's problems, but he's young, and if he can fix some of these problems, like he could be the superstar player. And I would have probably viewed it as like a 2-5% chance, and that's what we're hitting. You know, sometimes you roll the dice and you roll the natural 20 for all you D&D fans out there, and that's what happened on the Josh trade.
Well, if the Bulls end up number one seed in the East, Doug, I don't think there should be any debate. Because he's clearly our best player to me right now. I mean, there's no one even close. I mean, maybe you can say Vooch is. Vooch is playing at an all-star level, too.
No, but I think Giddey, it's Josh Giddey. Giddey is totally different than Vooch. Vooch is playing at a great level, but he's still mostly the recipient of the good work of others. Like, you know, Vooch isn't cooking in isolation. Like Giddey's really making the whole thing go, not Vooch. I mean, and Vooch is, I don't mean that as an insult to Vooch. Vooch is playing extremely well, like, which I mentioned. But Giddey is really what's making this whole thing go, and it's fantastic.
If the Bulls are a 55-win team, number one seed in the East, like, he absolutely needs to be considered. He should be a top five MVP vote-getter because he's the guy who's causing this. He's been incredible.
I think that's
absolutely incredible.
I still can't quite buy in that all of this is going to go down that way. Just because there's still variance, I need to be a little bit more in the prove it state. But it's fantastic to see now, and so I would say, even though I'm still cautiously skeptical of where this will be at the end of the year, I'm enjoying every second of it. Like, while we have it, right? Like, it's like, this is why you watch sports. You mostly don't win titles. These people who are like title or bust, blah blah blah. Like, you mostly don't win titles if you can't enjoy a genuine, really good run. When your team is playing well against good competition, like, I don't know. I would not want to watch sports then, because you would be miserable like 98% of the time. You know,
Marquet, that's one to grow on. Listen to what Doug's telling you.
Got to enjoy the good times. It's like I always say, the 2004-05 Baby Bulls, it's one of my favorite years ever. They won 47 games, lost in the first round of playoffs. Like, I love that year. You know, the year that the Bulls played the Celtics, and, you know, kind of Derrick Rose was a rookie, and those early Derrick Rose years, even though they still finished with 41 wins, those are like great years because you're building towards something. There's been like a lot of years I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, Joakim Noah and Nate Robinson beating the Nets in the playoffs. Like, you got to take joy out of like all of these good times, even if it doesn't always end, you know, in the best thing ever. You know, like, I look at my own life, like, I'm not the CIO of Microsoft. You know, I still think my career turned out okay. You know, like, it's like, you got to enjoy all the good stuff that's going on. You can't just sit there and think, well, it's not the best thing in the entire world, so it sucks. You know, that's just like such a, you would never look at anything else, hopefully, in your life with that lens of like, if I'm not the best in all the world, it just wasn't worth doing. Like, that just, this is not a realistic way to go about enjoying anything in life.
Well said. I just recently had this discussion to some degree. You know, I married a Filipina girl whose parents came from, you know, the Philippines in the late 60s, and my wife was born here. But when I first met my father-in-law, who unfortunately has passed on, but was literally one of the greatest guys that probably ever walked the planet, you know, we didn't have a ton in common but sports. Like, sports is the unifying discussion point that transcends race, class, everything. And when you have a team in a city that kind of does well, it allows for a starting discussion point amongst all that divides us, you know, and that's how we hit it off. And you know, we both had a mutual love for the Chicago Bulls, and you know, that started a relationship. And I see, like, a lot of these people are coming back into my life now that I haven't talked to in years. Are the Bulls for real? I don't know if this has happened to you, but it's happening to me a lot. Like, a lot of people are texting me that I haven't talked to. My gosh, I haven't heard from you in 5 years. And, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, I just want to see, is this real? Like, what's going on? And, you know, and then I give all my thoughts about Okoro and everything else and share my knowledge. But it's, I think that's the best thing about it. It's just like, we're having these conversations with people that are back together and just enjoying it. And that's like also with the Bears too, you know. The Bears, I think I have a little bit less confidence, and I just can't believe some of the wins they're getting. And it's great. Celebrate it. And don't, you know, get all caught up in, are they for real or are they just getting lucky? It's probably a little bit of both, I guess.
But both teams, I think, a similar vibe there, right? Like, both teams, you're like, you should be happy with how things are going compared to how they've gone recently. You should also be a little skeptical of what it means in the long run, but you should also be enjoying the heck out of the ride, you know, along the way. I kind of feel that way about both. And to your point, it's funny. I've worked at the same place now for, I think, I'm going on close to 7 years. And it just came out recently to, like, a bunch of people that, like, oh, yeah, this Doug guy knows a lot about the Bulls. And now, like, people are coming out of the woodwork. Like, what do you think of the Bulls?
They didn't even know you were the pod father? They had no idea about your status.
It's like, well, I think, you know, if you go back, like, in my prime of really covering the team or doing a lot of stuff, you know, that kind of ended in 2013, 2014, in terms of when I was like super into it, you know, there was a point where I would say like, this, you know, very much a unique voice. And now we have so many great voices. We've talked about that a lot. But there was a time where I was like a really unique and kind of notable voice in the Bulls sub community for people who weren't on like the national media stage or like, you know, really big local media. And you know, that point ended 11 years ago. So, you know, like I've been at this company 7 years. You know, so like I've just been this really teeny bit player all of that time, where there's really no reason anyone would have run across that unless I go around shouting it out. And I don't really go talk about it at work unless it comes up naturally. So just is that way. But somehow the rumor is spread, and then that plus with the team going well, it's like all of a sudden people come out of the woodwork like, let's talk Bulls. And I'm like, oh yeah, let's do it. Like, so, and then they'll be like, I tell some of the media day stories and other stuff, and people are like, oh, that's amazing. And you know, it's actually been a nice way to connect with a lot of people that are important to connect with that I wouldn't have connected with otherwise, to your point. It's like, it's great to connect with people over this kind of like neutral topic. So it's good stuff.
We're already at 20 minutes, believe it or not.
And not have said anything. We've said nothing. Which is par for the course.
I did want to go over, so, you know, one more quick thing I wanted to bring up that I talked about on Waddle and Sylvie was, if in August, if I would have told you after seven games, the Bulls would have more wins than the Bears after eight, wouldn't you think that it would be like a historically bad year for both teams? And lo and behold, both teams are over 500. Just think about that, how insane that is. It's crazy. Anyhow, the reason I made the case on X, and I don't know if you saw my post, but I did want to elaborate on this a little bit. I think we might have witnessed the greatest front office turnaround in the history of Chicago sports. And there's four franchise changing moves that have created this team that is 6-1 right now. And I'd like to go over those four and get your opinion on them. And you tell me, like, what do you think? First of all, do you agree with it? And number two, do you think it's possible that these guys have suddenly become just really good at their job? All right. So let's start out with number one, Bozelas, draft pick in 2024 at 11, A+. Right? I mean, any comments on that?
It's a great pick. You know, the thing I'll say is Bozelas was mocked. At one point, he was viewed as potential number one in the draft. He was mocked at 5. He fell to 11. A great pick. I don't know how much that says to me about the front office. It's a little bit like picking Io DeSumo. Like, it was not a stretch or anything. You know, this is so. But it was a great pick. It was the right pick. It was the right move. Yeah, it was definitely the right move, but like the amount of credit I get is still kind of like up in the air.
One side note on Bozelas I did want to mention in this early run. Like before the season, I would say 80 to 90% of Bulls fans kind of viewed him as the key to like us taking that next step and, you know, him being the legit superstar on the Chicago Bulls or the best option for that. I don't think you can even remotely say that anymore. I mean, it's Josh Giddey, period. And if you're, I do love Bozelas. He's been up and down. Like, I thought he had a couple really bad games, you know, in the last seven, which is what you expect from a 21-year-old. A couple great ones. You still see great signs. The last game in the first half, Bozelas had zero rebounds, and same with Patrick Williams. You can't have zero rebounds from your power forwards in a half. It's just inexcusable. And he's still getting a little bit manhandled at that four position. So I think there's great future ahead of him, but he's not the guy. Josh Giddey's the guy. What say you?
Agreed. Now, fundamentally, I'll put it this way. Like, I think Bozelas is on the right path, you know, towards what we said in the offseason, which is like it's going to be a little up and down still. People are a little bit out in front of their skis on Bozelas. Like, we both really like what he can become, but he's still not there yet. And you see the flashes of him getting there. You see totally why he can get there. And then you also see the games where it's like, yeah, he's clearly not there yet.
Yep.
So very excited about him, but yeah.
Number two, the LaVine trade. And, you know, at the time, I thought none of us were really happy about it, really, for the vast majority of people that really appreciated and liked Zach LaVine. But when you look back, we acquired three rock-solid role players in Trey Jones, Herder, and Collins. I wouldn't trade one of those guys alone for Zach LaVine when you consider it a contractual obligation, and I love Zach. And in addition to that, we got our pick back. You know, we'll see, to be determined how valuable that is. What say you?
I don't think this was any particularly good move. They had the trade Zach. They just took the best, maybe even the only package they could find for him. I think it worked out really well for the team. But clearly we're moving on from him. There's a lot of fighting. They clearly made promises they trade him. I just think this was the only thing they can get. It was fine. I don't know that we're going to keep any of these guys outside of Trey Jones past this year. You know, so whatever, it's fine. I don't think that was like some super brilliant move. They could have got 3 first round picks for Zach and I think it was Grimes like 2 years ago. That would have been better. It would have been better to do this earlier. Like they still screwed this up. So they made the best decision they could when they made that decision. But it was still a huge error to not have done this like 3 years earlier.
But that's not the debate.
Zach LaVine demanded out. They fought publicly for a year. They clearly knew they had to trade him, and they just took the best thing they could get. That's not like some brilliant thing. It's just they did what they had to do at that point. So I don't give them any credit.
Let's just the trade itself.
It's fine. It was the best trade
for Trey Jones.
I mean, it was, dude, again, you're not listening to me. They had to make the trade. They fucked it up for 3 years, and then they made the best trade they could. And I agree this trade was fine. I'm not saying it was a bad trade. I said that at the time, too. This was the best they were going to get now. It worked out well for them. That's all great. But as a front office, looking at how they handled Zach LaVine, no, I don't give them a lot of credit for that.
I will say I have a vastly different opinion of this deal. Trey Jones and Herter, I think, are very valuable role players. Very valuable. And they've been an essential part of this turnaround. And Collins is our best interior defender. So I love this freaking trade.
Wait till they're all re-signed. Wait till you see what happens in a year. Because if all those guys are gone.
We already got Trey Jones resigned.
Yeah. And we love the Trey Jones resigning. Wait, you gotta wait. Cause it's if Herter demands $20 million and then you pay him that and then he ends up being kind of a bad contract or it's like those guys, it just depends what happens. And I think they didn't make this trade with the goal of resigning them. Anyway,
Do you actually think Herter will get $20 million? Just look at the player he is. I think he's going to get 10 to 15.
Yeah, we'll see. Again, I'm not saying he's going to get one thing or the next thing. I think Herter and Collins are unrestricted free agents. It's a weak class. They're going to get the absolute most money they can. Whoever has them is going to be the team that pays them more than anyone else wants to pay them in the NBA, which usually means they're not on great contracts. So we'll see what happens. But
agreed with most of what you said there. Agreed. We should have traded Zach many years ago. Would have got a lot more for him. But
I agree. It's a good trade. I agree it's a good trade. We're not really disagreeing over any of the facts. We both agree this trade was good. We both agree a move better earlier would have been better. You know, I'm just saying I don't give them credit for just we had to do this thing. We were forced into it. And then so once we were forced into it, we finally just did the best thing we could at the time.
Okay. Let's move on to 3 and 4. So number 3, and this is to me the most understated.
I already know what this is.
Awesome move. Okoro for Lonzo Ball. Okoro, 24-year-old for Lonzo Ball, 28. Lonzo's shooting 32%, 28 for 3 for the Cavs. He shot 36% last year. I think there's a legit possibility that Lonzo Ball is done. I hate to say it. He's a great guy, great story. The whole thing's fantastic. Everybody loves his basketball IQ. He's got to sit every back-to-back. He's played a lot so far for the Cavs, surprisingly, but he's been terrible on the offensive end. I'm just shocked that people didn't appreciate this trade more for what it was to get literally the best defender on the team, who's a legit perimeter stopper, who will take the best opponent's offensive player every freaking night. And we're all hand-wringing Lonzo Ball is the second coming of, Scottie Pippen or something. It was
Lonzo Ball anymore. I mean, that's not true. No one thinks Lonzo Ball is good anymore. He sucks. It's sad, but it's true. He sucks. He's not good. This was a salary dump for the Cavs. It was using a salary to get a player we wanted for us. I think both teams got what they wanted. The Cavs didn't do this trade to get Lonzo Ball. They did this trade to get rid of Okoro's contract.
On that, you are correct.
And we wanted Okoro. We needed him. It's a win-win. It's a win-win for both teams. The Cavs, they got what they wanted, which was salary relief. Not on-court value. And we got what we wanted, which was a perimeter defender because we really needed
one. But that's the part that everyone else missed that I noted. I don't believe the Cavs wanted to trade Okoro for Ball. They needed that Okoro signed guaranteed in year two. Lonzo Ball is not going to be on this team. He might be on the Cavs.
This is not about Ball This is the Cavs being we just need to get Okoro off the roster because we have all these other expensive players.
The only team in the second past the second apron are the Cavs. They will be under that apron by the time the year ends. Giddy trade and extension is number four. I mean, you know, yeah, you were definitely more positive on the trade. I still stand by this.
Let's not get into it.
Yeah, let's not get into it, but we
don't start. This has, reality, this has to be a non-starting conversation with us. It'll, we'll derail it into 10 minutes into the same stuff we said 1,000 times. So
we'll just, it worked out for both teams. Worked no up, doubt. You know, worked out for Caruso both teams. Helped OKC. But, I mean, Giddey has surpassed, absolutely surpassed my expectations on what everyone's, he was going to do. I knew he was going to put up
everyone's numbers, expectations, but. Right? Everyone's expectations, not just yours. You were not alone in your criticism of this trade when it was made. And
brilliant, yeah, guys. Like Steph No.
Yeah. Steph everyone No, everyone hated this trade. And everyone was wrong. Yeah. And like, look, not to give myself too much credit on this, I also was just like, well, I can see why they did it. There's this chance that this is like a high upside. Like, if I was going to pick a guy who maybe if he fixed things could be a superstar and is available, Josh was the best guy for that. But I said, like, what's super unlikely, you know, but like, this is what they're thinking. And that's how it turned out. Like I said, we rolled a natural 20 on the straight. I didn't hate it when we made it, but I wasn't like in love with it. You know, I think if I went back in time, I believe my stance was I'm happy with this trade. I would have also been happy if they traded for like a first round pick. And I would have been fine with either path. The important thing was like trade Caruso before he leaves for nothing. And we did that. And I was happy either way. So that isn't like some, like I was over the moon for this trade telling everyone you're wrong. It's like, you know, my thought was like the pick is probably also going to be lousy. It was going to be like number 13 and in a bad draft. Probably wouldn't have turned out great either. And I didn't think Josh was going to work, but I thought it was as good a chance as the pick working. And yeah, it's worked out great. So this ended up being an A+ move, 100%. I mean, no debate, right? Like everyone now thinks that. Have you seen the meme of like the IO Josh Giddey and apology checkbox meme that's like going around Twitter? Yeah. So like everyone thinks this, right? Like everyone thinks this.
Yeah, I've seen that too. A lot of the same people sending that out. I feel like responding with my Billy Donovan apology because the same people that have been sending that out are the biggest critics of Billy Donovan. How can you possibly say Billy Donovan's a bad coach anymore? I mean, my gosh.
I don't know how anyone could have said it in the past, to be honest. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I've argued with so many people on that one, but yeah. So
we're all wrong.
Obviously, the most important. Levels. We're all wrong. Even me, I'm wrong too. Like, I'm in that group. Maybe I'm like 10% less wrong than everyone else, but still wrong. So, you know. That's not like a big win by any stretch. It's like, it's amazing. No one saw this coming, and it's awesome.
Well, I will publicly apologize for every single criticism I made about Josh Giddey because I, as I said before, am a full Giddey now. Like, I freaking love the guy. I think he's absolutely an MVP conversation. He's a triple. He's 23. I can't even believe this is another thing, too. Like, you have this idea in your head that Josh Giddey's like 10 years older than like, let's say, you know, Modis. He's like a year and a half older. It's crazy. He's 23 years old and he's playing like this. This is insane.
I think to your point, you know, this was a super unlikely outcome. Everyone thought it was super unlikely. Sometimes a super unlikely outcome's it, right? You know, it's like no one liked Jimmy Butler when we drafted him.
Or Taj Gibson.
He became a star player.
Remember Taj? Yeah.
Or Taj Gibson.
Remember at the party?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just like people can be wrong and it's okay to be like, you know, this is what seems more likely. And then to admit later on, like, you know what? But the reality was the most likely thing sometimes doesn't happen. Sometimes the unlikely thing happens. And it's hard to predict with basketball players which ones will make unlikely leaps, right? Like what is your reason? Like, you looked at Josh Giddey's shooting form. What possible reason would you think, like, this guy's going to shoot 40% from three? Like, his form is awful. His release is awful. You know, like, you know, so it's like you look at that and you're like, if you had to predict anyone who's going to become a great shooter, a good shooter, like, why would you possibly think this is going to be the guy who's going to pull it off? Like, you wouldn't. It doesn't make sense. So, you know, it's like sometimes it's just like things happen that are just not easy to explain. And this is like one of those things where he's become this guy and, you know, it's awesome. So we just get to take the rewards. But like, it's okay to point out these things are like fringe chances, right? Like that aren't likely to happen.
I still have some questions on whether that shot is still sustainable, but what's not, I don't have any more questions about is how this guy has become a just absolutely fantastic attacker of the rim and finisher to a certain degree. And he's just doing way, way better in that aspect and getting to the line at double where he was in his career. It's It's freaking crazy.
Yeah, 100%.
It's freaking crazy. 100%. Anyhow, on that note, we got to bring in NDT. The next couple of games are going to be really difficult to win. I'm hoping, I'm predicted 5-2 in the next seven on the last show.
I'm going to toss one thing out there if you got 2 seconds. They still should have made that New Orleans Pelicans trade. It's like, if you think about everything they've done, if they had done that one other thing and we didn't have Noah Asenge right now, and we had the Pelicans' unprotected first-round pick next year. They're currently, I think it's like 1-7 or 1-6 or something. Like, there's like four guys who have like superstar potential in the draft, and that pick is slotted right now in the 2-6 range. Like, the worst it could be is 6. I would think we actually have championship equity if we had done that trade. And that's why I still can't get fully on board with these guys. Like, I think like some of the stuff they've done, it's good, but some of it has just also gotten lucky. And we're going to have to figure out how to pay the bills to keep everyone in a year. And if they had made that trade, they really could have something if that worked out. And now, and we still might. But like, man, that would have really upped our odds. So that's why I'm still a little bit out on these guys. Like, they still do not seem to value draft capital. When they talked about the trade, like, someone asked them, and they basically said like, well, I know New Orleans got a great player. Like, they even when they were talking about the trade, they didn't say like, oh, Atlanta made a great move. They like specifically called out, oh, New Orleans got a great player. Like, they should have. That was a great trade for them. Like, basically defending the idea that taking the player instead of the picks was the right idea. And like, that still fundamentally, like, they do not seem to value draft assets at all. And so until they figure that out, like, I'm going to have a hard time like really fully coming around on the front office.
I was pretty public in my viewpoints on Derek Queen and the idea that I agree with you that New Orleans would give away that type of draft capital for Derek Queen, unprotected one. Everybody at that time that I really respect, we're all unanimous, and why didn't the Bulls make that deal? The only counter I will say is if it doesn't end up top three, it ends up 5, 6, 7, I will give it some time. I mean, because I do feel like we don't really know Noah Asenge. He seems like he's got a lot of tools, right? And I agree, he's so far away and so raw.
Well, you would have a better prospect next year who would then be a rookie with 4 years on his deal versus Noah Asenge, who will be a slightly worse prospect and needed a gap year and will only have 3 years left on his deal. So like, anyway, like, and we would have also had like 22, which was Asenuel, who seemed like, you know, a reasonable prospect as well. Like, in that deal too, we would have had another pick that we'd have gotten this year. So it doesn't matter. Anyway, I'm happy with what AK has done, but until he starts valuing draft assets, I'm going to have a hard time fully coming around on him. We'll just leave it at that. Like, that's the area I still need to see the Bulls like figure out is like, you know, the draft is actually really important. It's your way to get cheap players. It's the way to refresh your roster under the aprons. It's, you know, and they've not figured that out yet.
Well, the Bulls have a number of good players that are playing at a high level right now, especially at the guard position. And there are a lot of teams in need of a guard, most notably the Houston Rockets. So let's see what they do before the trade deadline. You know, there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen between now and then, but I think you could probably leverage one of those guards for some really good draft assets that would help potentially sustain the Red Leviathan.
I'm not sure Houston has any draft assets to trade.
Good point.
Yes, not without having it in front of me, like after getting Durant and some of the other
moves. They got a couple good front court players I like, though, that's for sure. So.
All right. Well, I know you got to go.
All right. Take it easy, DT. Always good to. And then let's bring in the big red bus. And until next time, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
All right, DT. Talk to you later, buddy.
See you. Bye.